Welcome to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And what is Idle Red Hands Weekly? Well, this is...
It's this.
It's what you're listening to. It's a shorter, contained version of the podcast, just talking about what we're thinking about, what we're working on, and what you can expect to see coming up either as videos or podcasts on our channel. Just a way to connect more and be giving more, because post-production and the actual scheduling of podcast recordings is so...
Oh, that's right. The two people here are the ones that did post-production.
Yeah, right.
Mostly. Yes. That's why I disappeared.
It's a difficult thing to kind of maintain regularly, especially with the research involved. So, you know, we're researching and then producing and then post-producing and, you know, doing all the editing. And so that doesn't end up being a weekly event.
No, it ends up being like a real tight and time intensive schedule to make it a weekly.
Yes. Event, so, yes. Yeah. So this is actually our lunch break. So we're going to have a weekly lunch break discussion and just kind of go over what we've been doing and kind of what we've been talking about. So, Chris, what have you been doing this week?
Apart from working and on constantly being on Twitter, not actually a whole lot, which is great for radio. Actually, no, I take that back. So just kind of following along with the She-Ra and the Princess of Power kind of April Fool's joke.
Yeah.
It was April Fool's and, you know, people always do jokes. And someone made a Twitter account for the She-Ra and the Princesses of Power RPG.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people were suspicious. I was kind of like, oh, that'll be cool. Turned out to be a joke. But I'm not going to say it might end up not being a joke.
Mm-hmm.
But enough people got on there and said, yeah, this would be awesome. We want to see this. So it might someone might actually do something with it.
Wow.
So, I mean, there's no guarantee or, you know, but enough kind of industry people kind of said, hey, DreamWorks, hey, Noelle Stevenson, I think. Maybe I got her name wrong, the showrunner.
Mm-hmm.
This is a thing that should happen.
Wow. So. It's funny. I'm surprised how many April Fool's gags turn out to be something people actually want. Let's think of something outrageous. Oh, people actually want that. what would be funny? And yeah, they're not funny. Usually they're not funny. And it actually just creates, you know, desire.
Yeah. I guess that one of the benefits of being here in Japan and kind of like being a day early is kind of, it ends up being on like the second for us.
Right.
Which I guess isn't that great because you're like, I thought we were done with this crap.
Yes.
You know, and right, like, right. Oh, a whole extra day of it. Great.
Yes.
But how about you?
So I have been painting my Other Side army, the weird miniatures Other Side game. So I have a Cult of the Burning Man that I've been painting, and I based them all white, and so I'm doing washes. And I thought that would be a faster way to do it, but actually I'm fussing with it so much.
All
it's like watercolor paint. I keep layering and layering, but they're going to look good once they're done. So hopefully I'll be able to stream some of that. That'll be happening soon. And then once I'm finished, I think Nick is almost finished with his Abyssinia. So that'll be a cool matchup. And it's just going to be like 25 points because that's the base box. And getting to 50 points is going to be painful, painting-wise.
I didn't think halfways were supposed to be painful.
Right. So we'll see. But yeah, it looks like a really fun game. And the miniatures are great. The plastic is kind of different. It was very shiny and kind of flexible. Hmm. So all of the little spikes and vines and tentacles on my miniatures, nothing broke off in packaging. And I've even dropped one and was like, oh my God. And nothing.
Right.
Yeah. The thing I was worried about is priming, that would the primer actually stick, and it sticks great.
What primer did
you use? I just used the Citadel White that they have, and because it's got
something
a nice,
that's trademarked.
Yeah, right. It's got a really nice texture to it. Yeah, and so I like how it works with their washes, especially. So I went that way because some of the Japanese ones are a little glossy.
Yeah. Now I use the Mr. Hoppy stuff.
Yeah, right.
I still got to do my Tau for Kill Team. I haven't had time to do anything with them.
Oh, yeah.
Because, hey, people at home, don't have toddlers. but I'm going to go with a gray. I'm going to do the classic kind of white. And I thought gray would be a good thing to like build up the white from, or kind of like take it down for darker fatigues. But
yeah.
So look for that sometime in 2025, I guess.
Yeah. The only thing I don't like about basing in white is how unforgiving it is. If you miss something, it's so noticeable. Like, you miss any little thing and the white just screams, you know, out. Whereas black is so forgiving. It's just, oh, that's a recess. That's
exactly. Yeah, that's why you should put stuff in black. Yeah.
Well, so our latest podcast was the racial ability bonuses. If you would like to hear that, it's a very nice discussion of kind of where those bonuses should be and what does that actually say about differentiating the fantasy races. But from that discussion, we came up with some other topics that will be showing up in future podcasts. And if anybody is very excited about one of these topics, please let us know and we'll kind of make that a priority.
Yeah, listener feedback is great.
Yes, it is. So the first thing we were talking about is actually playing evil, because there's always an alignment system, or, you know, it's a very common thing, especially in Dungeons and Dragons. And how do you do that? Because most of the time players are discouraged from playing a chaotic evil player character in a party and just sabotaging everything, or, you know, being difficult. So I thought that would be an interesting...
Not to get into it, but I wonder if that's because of how chaotic evil is scene. Not necessarily how it's presented in the books, mm-hmm. but how players interpret it. Because chaotic evil, it's always the jerk at the table
right.
who screws everybody over. And you're like, well, you know, come on. We don't want to play with that character
right,
usually. Right. So, but I wonder if actually in the book, the chaotic evil is presented differently. Mm-hmm. And we've just kind of all internalized that this is what it is.
Right, right. That's true. Yeah, no, that may be the case. And I think an interesting discussion with alignments is, well, what if evil is kind of the world's base alignment? What if that is what everybody is and good is actually the outlier, that the difficulty is actually people being good in that world?
That was a good point. Like, yeah, is the alignment system kind of, are these universal truths essentially that mm-hmm. affect everything in the universe? Or do they change based on the society you're in or even kind of the culture you're in?
Right.
Lawful good mm-hmm. means you kind of follow the laws. But what if the laws are kind of evil to someone else?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, wow. That's good. And the other thing, which is kind of an extension of that idea, is evil races. What you consider races in a playable race, I guess, that would be evil. And what does that actually mean? Because when we were talking about racial abilities, the discussion of orcs or right. goblins or those types of races of characters, they're depicted in fantasy, especially Tolkien-based fantasy, as evil. They're basically, their origin is evil. So how would you play those and how would those work in a system? And should you ever consider a race to be based in evil? I mean, monsters, you know, it makes sense because you need an excuse
right.
to be exterminating them, stealing from them at least. And what would that mean?
Yeah, that colonialism goes down a lot easier when the people you're fighting against and taking the land from are unequivocally evil.
Yes.
So yeah, you got to have some of those, I guess, for some of those games. But
you see colonialism, and that was a thing we've been seeing coming up in RPG settings, and I think it also came up in our discussion, a non-Eurocentric fantasy setting.
Right.
Like, you know, what does that look like and how many problems does that eliminate? I think, I mean, because it takes away a lot of the uncomfortable feelings of how races or settings are established and how they resonate with the real world if you take away that European origin. Hopefully in the future, and I think we're kind of going to actively be looking for settings that don't come from that European tradition, that aren't all based on Tolkien. The Tolkien hole.
Yep, I'm out of that Tolkien hole. Yeah.
Yes. I think that'd be nice to see. And I think it would also let a lot more people come to the table with a kind of fresher idea of how to play and like what they wanted to do.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I mean, even apart from non-European stuff, just recognize the fact that, hey, people of color and stuff were actually in Europe the mm-hmm. whole time
mm-hmm.
and just didn't get depicted. And so maybe it might be more research, but yeah, go and actually look and then think about, okay, well, what if we actually made Europe or this Europe-centric settings look the way Europe actually did?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So those are some topics that may be coming up in future more extended podcasts, and we just wanted to kind of give a quick overview of those.
Teasers.
Yes, teasers, right. Perfect. And the next thing I wanted to mention is there are a couple of Kickstarters that this is their last week, and we're interested in looking at both of them. And speaking of non-Eurocentric settings, I think both of these kind of fit into that category where they take you out of that context where you're not expecting those tropes of elves and dwarves. And the first one, an Afrofuturist sci-fi setting called Swords Fall. And that was created by Brandon Dixon, who in an interview said, Black Panther, you know, I saw Black Panther and I want more of this. I mean, Afrofuturist is something that's a setting I want to play in. And I know players that want to do that. The Kickstarter is for an art and lore book.
Right.
So it's kind of, giving you, it's like a background book. He wanted to give you the setting of this whole nation, but it's on a separate planet.
Okay.
So you're not bringing with you any stereotypes or tropes, but it has that Afrocentric flavor.
Right.
And I think it's very interesting. His big RPG inspiration was Vampire the Masquerade.
Oh, really?
And he said, you know, reading those books, you know, he was just obsessed with that setting. And he wants to create a world and then have a system in that world that makes people feel that same way. They want to know more about all the tribes or clans mm-hmm. of that world and really get involved in the mythology and lore that, you know, they're creating and have it be completely removed from any kind of European setting. Because I think Vampire the Masquerade is very European-based,
I came in for Vampire at Requiem, so a lot of that clan and stuff with background stuff got stripped out and lost.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I looked at Swords Fall and then figured out, it's an art and lore book. I was expecting an RPG kind of right from the get-go, and I wonder how, I just kind of wonder how that's going to work, whether it's going to be sort of a positive or a negative, where you have the setting and style first, even like stories and stuff, and then you kind of, I guess, craft an RPG system for it. I mean, I said that, but I brought up She-Ra, and that's obviously an existing property that would then have an RPG built for it, so it's not an impossible thing to do.
Right.
But I think for games, my feeling is they either kind of get developed simultaneously or the other way around, kind of the system first and then the, not always, but yeah. So I'd be curious to see what RPG system gets used or made for Swordsfall.
Right, right. Yeah, I think that that will have a lot to do with it, no matter how good the setting is, if you don't enjoy the system or if it doesn't reinforce the setting. Yeah.
I would want it to reinforce. Problem. But that being said, I've bought a number of games that I kind of knew I wasn't going to like just to get numbers and stats so that I could port them to something else. Right, or right. I liked the setting enough where I said, okay, I want to, again, see all the numbers and how these things kind of stack up against themselves in this system so that I better know how to replicate it in another one, like that Death Watch thing. There's no way in hell was I going to run that FFG Death Watch game where like the stat blocks were like 3 pages long.
Yes.
But it was still useful for porting it to something else.
Mm. Yeah, that's good. The other Kickstarter that's in its last week is Mysthia, which Mysthia is a...
There's a Y and an S-T-H. Yes,
so I'm not lisping, I'm pronouncing the name. It's a setting based on a board game by Tabula Games, which is a Italian developer. And they've done a board game, kind of an area control board game, and a card game in this setting. And there's a third game that they're doing, but a British RPG developer is working on an RPG system. And actually, they're using Powered by the Apocalypse. They said partially?
Adjacent,
yeah. So that setting, so like, 2d6 system. But the setting itself is very interesting and very magical. The idea is a planet, a giant, like, asteroid-sized crystal collided with a planet.
Okay.
And this magical crystal had these properties that just, it fragmented the planet, but something about it held things together. So you're basically adventuring on floating islands around what used to be the civilization, and things were just restructured. And this is a more of a guild-based, like a kingdom arose, and the king kind of sanctioned these different guilds to control different parts of this world.
Interesting.
Okay. And they said they did in the system, because there is so much history in the setting, they wanted players to experience as much as possible of it. So they arrange these flashpoints, which are kind of like tiny, historically centered, like things that the characters are dropped into, or maybe you play characters that have roles in that situation, so you can kind of feel the history of the setting itself. And I thought that was an interesting
approach. Kind of like little scenarios, or kind of like the old Warhammer 40K board game where they said, if you want to recreate the Battle of Macragge, it's this.
Right. Historical, in that setting, narrative adventures.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah. Looking through the art book for Mysthia, which is real hard to pronounce, it kind of reminded me a little bit of the old Magic the Gathering setting, Mirrodin. Which is one of the ones that last ones before I got out. But I really liked that kind of organic fusion of metal and flesh where like the things were like really woven together to the point where people would have like metal hair or their digits would just kind of like end in metal bits. Mm. And it wasn't like cybernetics. It was way more organic.
Right.
And some of the crystalline stuff in Mysthia, which is a mouthful to pronounce, looks kind of similar, where it's not like, it doesn't look like these two things shouldn't go together. Mm-hmm. It's, flesh kind of growing, or vines kind of growing around crystal, which I thought looked really cool. I'm, as a fan of Powered by the Apocalypse, when I found the RPG, I'm like, oh, it's PBTA adjacent. Okay, well, that puts it a bit higher on my list of things to check out.
Right,
because I, more so than the 2D6, which, I mean, it's easy to get, I like how PBTA moves are structured, about how that first fictional trigger really changes based on the setting.
Right,
like looking at like attack moves, not to get too deep into it, like they would all be different for different games, hopefully, like a well-designed one, and that fictional trigger and what you have to do to make the mechanics kick in can really reinforce and help better ground the players in whatever setting you're playing in.
That's a good point. Yeah, I'm very curious to see how they run it. I'm happy that the RPG company is actually working with the original artist, Travis Anderson, to do original art for the setting as well. So to kind of keep, keep things going and create more
in
that world.
I think, unless I read incorrectly, I think the RPG company also did Life Among Legacy?
Yes.
Or Life Among the Ruins?
Yeah,
which is another game I'd wanted to check out. I think I have first edition of that. Not that you can't do something right out of the gates the first time, but them having a track record and me being fairly positive on that other game makes me go, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You're probably not going to drop the ball on this because you've done one before.
Yeah. So both of those Kickstarters are in their last week, so this will be up as quickly as possible. So please take a look at those and get involved if you like them. Yeah, there were both things that we noticed.
Should we say we don't get any money?
We're not. This is just things we were fans of, projects we're fans of. Yeah, that we're not associated
but
anyway.
If anyone out there wants to give us something, that'd be fine too.
But if you would pay us to say that, we would probably say that.
Yeah, probably.
The last thing was a question that we got on the YouTube channel that I wanted to touch on. So it was from our Forbidden Lands review, and Starbug Mechanic on YouTube wrote to us and asked about, can you dodge a magic attack in this system, meaning Forbidden Lands, Year Zero system? What if someone uses magic to throw a bunch of stones at you? This happened to me in my game, and the player and I were told I wasn't allowed to dodge. So I specifically looked at the rules, and they do say any attack can be dodged. And basically, so there's attacks both melee and ranged you can dodge. Parry is more conditional. You have to either have a shield or a weapon that has a parry ability.
You can't parry with your bare hand.
Right, right. Yeah. But dodging is something that you can do. And specifically, spells will say automatically hits. So if it's something that can't be dodged, it will tell you it automatically hits. And the Stone Song spell that I think they were using was Rock Storm or something. It's basically you're using your geomancy to hurdle existing stones. So you're creating stones. Yeah, right. Okay. So you're not creating stones that stones have to exist. You're just connecting with them and moving them. So it says armor works as normal. And so then I would assume dodge would work as well, because it's a physical attack. It's a physical ranged attack using a magic mechanism. Right. You're not using energy bolts or anything.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So that was our
in that case. And I only know a little bit about Forbidden Lands. I would say that it could be dodged, especially because I guess mechanically spells specifically say auto hit. So if it doesn't say auto hit, you would assume that you can either dodge maybe possibly parry if the situation was correct. So
There wasn't anything in the description of the spell that said this is going to be happening so immediately because it is actually your force and hurtling stones. So you're seeing stones come at you. So our assessment is it is a dodgeable attack.
I mean, unless the person was hurling like boulders or something.
Right. Yes. Aaron.
As an aside, did you see the joke? Someone joked on Twitter about how in Empire Strikes Back, they loved how badly Vader was trashing Luke in that fight because at the end, Vader just started hurling garbage at him. And you're like, how badly are you getting your ass whooped that your opponent's just like, I'm going to just chuck some garbage at you because that's where we're at in this point.
Yes.
I thought that was hilarious. It's going to remind me of like shooting rocks at someone with your telekinetic geomancy power.
Flinging random containers and exhaust supports at you. Yeah. All right. Well, that was our first episode of Red Hands Weekly. So this will be hopefully a weekly event where we will just kind of update you with things that we found interesting and things we're working on. And I guess the next thing that we'll probably be posting, we've got a couple unboxings. The Shadow Spear unboxing and also the Heroes of Blackreach unboxing.
Which is a tile-based game.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, right. Cool. Yeah, it's 40K. On tiles. So, so maybe not so exciting to be opening that. The miniatures were much more beautiful for Shadow Spear. So we'll take a look at that. Thanks for being here, Chris. And let everybody know how they can reach you if they want to.
Well, now that Google Plus has died, unfortunately, the only social media I'm on most of the time is Twitter.
Okay. All right. So what's your Twitter?
Hivemind.
Hivemind.
It's spelled with Ys.
It's spelled with Ys, yes. And also, there's an Outer Red Hands Twitter, of course, so you can get in touch with both of us through that. And also the website as well. There's contact information. Also, I think your Twitter is on the website as well. Okay. And is there anything you're working on or anything you'd like to refer people to, projects that you've...
Sure. A couple things I'm working on now, not necessarily mine. April TTRPG Maker hashtag. It's one of those you answer a question a day kind of thing.
Oh.
And it's just a nice way to find other TTRPG designers because everyone uses the hashtag, so you just follow that. I've been doing that, and someone also put up one of those one like one question answered things for their D&D characters. That's been floating around, and of course I goinked it, scratched out the D&D part and renamed it Monster Hearts. So I've been doing that. Also, Twitter is kind of now where I toss up random ideas about projects I'm working on since Google Plus disappeared. I try and thread them, but sometimes it'll just be like a random post that pops up.
Good. All right. And I guess I'm going to mention, because it's a thing that I've been doing weekly forever, abuse cartoons.
Yes.
So I do a weekly single panel gag cartoon, and I do a live stream of the drawing of those either on Sunday or Monday night for North America. So abusecartoons.com and on Twitter at abusecartoons.
Oh, nice. You do it. I always see it pop up fairly late, and I hadn't realized it because you were aiming for the North American market.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
Well, there's a reason I use apps that allow me to schedule tweets.
Yes. I think that's a very good idea. Well, thanks for joining us. And if you'd like to follow Outer Red Hands on Twitter at Outer Red Hands, and also there's a YouTube channel, and also Twitch. Pay attention to Twitch because we live stream a lot, especially when we're doing our recording. And idleredhands.com for all the information about what we're doing. So please, if you liked this podcast, please subscribe and let other people know by sharing.
And I'll definitely share this when it pops up on Twitter.
All right.
Cool.
Thank you very much.
See you next week.
Bye.
Out of